panel talking about how Russia has rejoined the so-called Grain Deal. That was an agreement started with the 19th of July this year, whereby ships from neither Ukraine nor Russia could sail to the Ukrainian ports of Odessa and Chernomorsk, pick up grain, sunflower, oil, wheat, foodstuffs, sail across the Black Sea, through the Bosphorus, in Turkish territorial waters, out into the Mediterranean Sea, and distribute Ukrainian grain all over the world. Sold a lot of it to Bangladesh, Spain, China, various other countries, Lebanon, I'm trying to think, Egypt, Syria, various other countries were buying it, but those were the major ones. Anyway, because for the first few months, the Ukrainian grain wasn't exported, it wasn't safe in the Black Sea. The Russian Black Sea fleet was scouring the sea, could interdict these ships, particularly Ukrainian merchant ships, could sink them. Would they have sunk a neutral merchant ship that wasn't put to the test? I suppose it would have been a thing to do, but as a sailor, would you be the person to risk it? I mean, would any insurance company cover a ship for this? Remember, insurance doesn't cover war. But Russia said this is not a war, it's a special military operation. I don't know how that would play out in the courts. But anyway, the United Nations brokered a deal. Ukraine and Russia signed separate documents. Turkey was very involved because of sailing through Turkey, the only NATO country with a reasonable relationship with Russia at the moment. But then there appeared to be a big Ukrainian drone attack on the headquarters of the Russian Black Sea Fleet at Sevastopol a few days ago. Obviously, Sevastopol's in Crimea, therefore it's Ukrainian. But since Ukraine became independent, Ukraine agreed that the Russian Black Sea Fleet could stay there. So, despite the Ukrainians bending over backwards to be accommodating and neighborly to the Russians, Russia still invaded them. Anyway, so because the Russians were miffed about that, we don't know how much damage they sustained, they said, ooh, nothing. They said, well, you use these whatever sea lanes as part of the attack. I mean, obviously, it was an airborne attack with drones, not a seaborne attack. We're doing this. Now, why did they choose to end the grain deal because of that? I think because they couldn't hit back any other way. But despite Russia saying this deal is over and we're no longer guaranteed the safety of the ships, they didn't do anything about it. A few merchant ships carried on picking up grain and sailing away from Ukraine. Why did Russia not do anything about it? Because I suppose their Black Sea fleet is mostly actually in the Sea of Azov and were not confident they could get anywhere near those ships. Or the Ukrainian ports of Odessa, Chernomorsk, lest they be destroyed by Harpoon missiles provided by NATO countries. And I suppose they didn't want to infuriate even more of the world by sinking or at least blocking ships from neutral countries. I say neutral, they might be from NATO and or EU countries, countries which are not actually combatants, not protagonists of this conflict, but could be countries which definitely back one side, could fund and arm one side, but they're not actually belligerent. So perhaps because of their sheer impotence, they decided to bring this deal back, revive it, and claim it was benevolence. Now, what was their reason for coming back to the deal just a few days after ending it? Is that they said that it was because they'd received sufficient guarantees from the Ukrainians that they wouldn't use these sea lanes for the purpose of launching attacks again. Now, Ukraine hasn't actually said that that's true, and obviously, I don't trust the Kremlin one bit. Nevertheless, the devil can speak true. Some of the things they say are true. I suspect the ulterior motive was really, as I say, partly because they're just powerless to prevent the grain deal going ahead anyway. It might have been they realized that they were also alienating people in less economically developed countries who might be fairly sympathetic towards Russia. There are not that many countries are well disposed towards Russia. Like six countries voted Russia's way in the United Nations, roughly 27 abstain on this. And some of those abstainers will move into the against camp, and Russia can't lose even more of them. Could they have sanctions for even more countries? Because their economy is being trashed. Their minor airlines are probably going to go bust in the next few months. I think the government will strive might and main to save Aeroflot, other companies. Putin's just said that he's going to liberalize the tourist regime. Almost people from almost any country can come to Russia without a visa, because their tourist industry is going to go bust. Not that tourism was that huge, but hotels go bust. I can't think who else is just going to go out of business. Their economy is contracting at least 10% this year, a few more percent the year after. It's going to be a few more percent the year after until the situation normalizes. I think obviously there is a bottom line. There's a point below which they will not shrink. And bear in mind, we're a world that's moving away from hydrocarbons anyway. which accounts for up to 50% of their economy. So where are they going to be in, say, 40 years' time? We're not buying any oil, gas, or coal whatsoever. So this whole grain deal was to run for 120 days. It was due to expire the 19th of November this year. Will it be prolonged beyond that? And Russia said they've yet to make a decision on that one. So many people rounded on Russia. I think that's what they did it. There was obviously a spike in grain prices, and it's changed. It was the United Nations Coordination Center arranging all this. Remember, Russia had the right to inspect these ships, see they weren't bringing any weapons into Ukraine and things like that. So over 9 million tons of food have been exported that way, particularly grain, and something like a further 20 million tons is still in Ukraine. Now, it can be exported over land, but the capacity for road and rail export is far less than by ship. It's just slower, it's more expensive, and so on, especially with Russia deliberately destroying the land infrastructure. So you notice how Russia's had to resort to a bit of carrot as well as stick, because their stick is actually not very effective. Talking about talks, would they make concessions? Seems that they would like a ceasefire, make it some sort of frozen conflict, consolidate what they've got, which they largely had that with Luhansk and Donetsk till earlier this year. They're not even talking about trying to get de jure recognition of Crimea as theirs. Remember, they've claimed another four regions as integral regions of Russia: Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia. So obviously stalling. There are other problems. I mean, those draftees, they're promised big bonuses, like up to $3,000, a golden hello, and it's not been paid. Some troops from Ulyanovsk, about 100 on strike over this. That could spread and spread. I don't think it'll spread that far, because the Russian government broke its promise to its people, of course, just like when Putin vowed that no conscript would ever be sent right at the beginning of the war. Within days, he went on television and said that pledge was broken. But of course, he disclaimed responsibility, passed the blame down the chain of command. I think that occasion probably is true, because he wouldn't lie and then immediately say, yeah, it was a lie, it was wrong, and my promise was broken. I think it's probably people who disobeyed him and they just couldn't find enough non-conscript troops, or just sent conscripts anyway. In a rush to sort of obey the actual order to send sufficient troops, didn't care whether they're conscripts or not. And obviously the mobilization not going terribly well, even then it has helped a little bit. So there are other problems, and that's why they're talking about nuclear weapons, saying, oh, well, this would really devastate the world, but we'll only use these defensively. So why do you keep mentioning nuclear weapons, threatening about nuclear weapons? They're trying to prepare a pretext, get their excuses ready in early, and claim, oh, the Ukrainians might set off a dirty bomb in their own territory just to pin it on us. So Russia's already got their bogus narrative in place. Or if they do that, as I think they will, actually, I really want to be wrong, though, because they've crossed all sorts of red lines. So that's another example of how the conventional war is not going terribly well. They're not that many cards left to play. They've got not that many missiles left. They're not willing to risk their air force. So in some ways, they're actually too risk-averse, having launched this madcap adventure. If he bet the bank in it, thrown everything he had at Ukraine in terms of the air force, they would have annihilated the Ukrainian air force and decimated the army, and could have made rather more significant gains. But in the other, but by not doing so, the West has seen that actually there is some fight in the Ukrainians. It is worth arming them and training them and actually beefing up the Ukrainian military, therefore more difficult to defeat. So Putin, I think, is not really banking on his military defeating the Ukrainians. He wants to break Western will, which he thinks is quite brittle. He looks at Afghanistan. After only 4,000 NATO deaths, NATO withdrawing just because there was no end in sight. If you can drag it out, a protracted conflict, he thinks the Western attention span is that of a mayfly. They'll give up. They'll start arming and funding Ukraine. They'll want to soften sanctions to get the oil and gas flowing. And of course, that might work for him. So he thinks that patience will pay off, and there are dividends to be paid by trying to divide the West, turn Western countries set them at each other's throats, turn them against each other. So he's trying to use sort of this hybrid warfare, military means, only part of it diplomatic, economic pressure. And he thinks he knows our pressure points, and obviously there's a certain logic to his case. So that's what I think is happening right now. And obviously, there's really no end in sight for this war. It's going on for at least several months. It may well be several years. Thank you for watching. So make sure you follow me, you subscribe on Patreon and donate to me on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Bye.